welcome to another edition of Five of the Best. This one is going to be about five drugs which were legal, although I really only wanted to do one story and I've sort of mollycoddled the rest together. There will be some pictures on Five of the Best at podomatic.com. The first plant I'm going to talk about is the marijuana plant, and the marijuana plant has been cultivated for at least 8,000 years and has been used for recreational and medical reasons. In fact, marijuana, it translates as the plant of two sexes. It's not just recreational the plant has been used for. It has been used for make textiles and paper, and the oil from the seed has been made to lights, to fuel lighting. The Romans used to use marijuana. They used to give it away to the citizens, to the people who felt like they might have had any bad feelings or malicious feelings to this conquering army who just invaded their land. And during with the rise of Christianity, the marijuana became more associated with the devil, and this received a decline in the use of marijuana. But marijuana sort of had the last laugh when the first Bible was written on hemp paper. And it's this versatility of the marijuana stem or the hemp, which can be made into paper, it can be made into textiles. And because hemp doesn't rot in seawater, you can make sails out of it, and you can make rigging out of it. And without this, Christopher Columbus and many of explorers right up to the 19th century used marijuana or hemp sails and hemp rigging to make the world a smaller place. Hemp didn't lose its relevance in the 20th century, and with the outbreak of war, the Germans deliberately targeted and tried to stop the cultivation and exportation of hemp from China and India to the UK. And as a result, America and the UK had vast forests of marijuana growing in their countries to help for the war effort. And the Germans were sent squadrons and try to fire and to bomb these fields and firebomb these marijuana fields, such as the importance of hemp during the war. The next drug I'm going to talk about is opium. The opium is made from the opium poppy, and it is obtained by scoring the opium poppy head, and the tears from the opium poppy is then collected and made into some resin, either smoked or ingested. Farming of the opium poppy goes back thousands of years, and has been used for pain relief and for recreational purposes. Known as the joy plant, or even better known as Alexander's flower, because Alexander the Great used to take it round on his travels and use it as pain relief. In China, people have been using the opium poppy for recreational and medical reasons since the 13th century without any major problems. In the 1770s, Britain wanted someone new to trade with, having recently been or been temporarily kicked out of the Americas, and they wanted to start trading with China, who had silks, teas, spices, but the UK really didn't have anything to do have that China wanted. I mean, Jacobean cupboards, big thick woolly coats. Britain became a large importer of all Chinese goods, the China tea, the porcelain, China porcelain, the silks and the spices. And China wanted no British goods, but they would accept as in payment gold and silver. And the reliance of the Chinese goods got so bad that by 1789, the Britain paid £4 million in gold and silver to China. 4 million might not sound a lot, but the whole country's revenue was 12 million. This couldn't continue with the balance of payments, so British response was to start drug smuggling. Although that China had already banned opium to its people, didn't stop the British start doing it. In fact, the British had another colony in India, and the opium poppy had actually flourished in the climate there and was much more potent than the Chinese version. This was good news for the East India Company, who, with the backing of the British government, they then sailed to India and purchased a case of opium and then sail it to China or for a price of $2, or they then could then be smuggled abroad into China and be sold for $10. This made the country enormously rich. Financial institutions like Lloyd's of London and a lot of the institutions today can all trace their money back to this sort of activity. The British and the East India Company could be held partly responsible for the Bengal famine. Before the British came to Bengal, it was considered to be the Garden of Eden, and the British chopped down large parts of it to grow cheap food for home. And they also encouraged the poppy seed, or the farmers there, to grow poppies rather than food. And as a result, a couple of bad seasons meant that there was a famine and hundreds of thousands died. Continuing this cheery story, if any Americans listening are feeling a bit smug, you shouldn't be, because you were doing it as well as the Dutch. And by 1810, it was estimated that a third of Chinese population was addicted to opium. And despite Emperor Lin Zexu writing to Queen Victoria, pleading for it to stop, it didn't. Lin Zexu then went to Guangzhou and seized 8 million pounds worth of opium and destroyed it. And he got rid of all the British from the area, either going to a small island or back on their boats. This led to the first opium war in 1840. The British wanted to continue this cozy little number, which they've been doing for nearly 50 years now. And at the time, the British had been fighting wars for nearly 200 years, and the Chinese hadn't. And it was one-sided. And they won back one Yanzhou, and they then forced the Chinese to surrender Hong Kong, so they got the island of Hong Kong, and they made them pay back the $8 million of opium they destroyed. In 1856, the Emperor of China intercepted a boat called the Arrow, which was smuggling drugs. The boat was destroyed, and this angered the British again, and this led to the Second Opium War. The Second Opium War involved more than one. The French also had invaded, and the Russians also were invading China. And the war went on for 3-4 years, and eventually the Chinese sued for peace, which they got. And after this, they were forced to make opium legal. And this had the reverse effect of what everyone thought it was going to be. This meant that they were in control of the opium, and they can control it. They could put farm opium, and it brought the price of opium right down. Also, the Treaty of the Second Opium War meant that Christians were allowed to enter the country, and it was in fact the Christians who came into the country, saw what was going on, and they came back to the British, and they began to campaign against the opium trade. And in fact, it was in 1910 that it stopped, and by 1920 it was fully illegal in the British. I think this is an important story. In Britain, people don't know about the Opium War. They do know it as a series of words, but they don't know. I've watched a lot of history programs. I've yet to see one about this subject. The fact that it got political backing, the fact that they knew it was illegal and they still went ahead and did it. And this wasn't a rush of blood to the head. This went on for 110 years. And right through the Victorian times, when Britain became enormously powerful, this brought huge wealth to the country through the suffering of others. And I am surprised with people's attitude to the British. I remember the Bengal, when the British went to Bengal and they changed the environment there. And ever since that, although they did suffer from flooding, the flood is much worse. And a lot of it could be attributed to what the British did in Bengal. In 1898, the German drug company Bayer launched heroin. In fact, heroin is made from the opium poppy, and by adding two synthetic chemicals to it, a very similar way to the way that morphine is made. And the Bayer claimed that it was the new fast-working potent painkiller and the non-addictive alternative to morphine. And in early tests of heroin, they saw that of 150 people tested on heroin, that they found that only 8 people became dependent on it. And this was enough for the Europeans to consider this a dangerous drug, but not in the USA. In the early 1900s in America, this was an era in which oversales drug counter was very common, and you can actually purchase heroin from a drugstore for about 20 cents for a pack. And by the 1909, heroin started to appear as an ingredient in such products such as syrups to aid your bawling baby, and as in cough medicine to cure of your cough. Although it probably would cure you of your cough, it would probably leave you with a crippling dependency on heroin. In fact, one of heroin's claims is that it would help you cure of your addiction to morphine. But by the early 1910, it was clear that heroin was a problem, and especially in New York, when many of its addicts supported their addiction by trading scrap metal, and thus earning the term junkies. With the increase of assaults attributed to the use of heroin, in 1924 the US government stopped oversale counters and only allowed heroin to be prescribed by doctors. The next drug I'm going to talk about is LSD. LSD was discovered by Albert Hofmann in 1943 when he was looking for a drug to aid the circulation system. In fact, he was looking at a fungus which grew on rye grass called ergot, and this had a number of uses right throughout the years throughout history. It was thought to be used in ancient Greece as a part of a drink and ceremonials. In ancient Greece they used it as a ceremonial drink, and in the medieval times the ergot was suspected to be the cause of St. Nicholas's fire. This is where people used to ingest the rye grass with the ergot on it, and whole villages developed madness. Back to Albert Hofmann. Albert Hofmann, while experimenting with the drug, accidentally got some on his finger, and this was absorbed into his body, and he went home feeling a bit dizzy. That night he had hallucinations, but he woke up the following day seeing the world in a different light. And this is what the LSD does. It's a very powerful drug. People who use it never see the world in the same light again. In the 50s, the CIA got its hands on it, and they thought it would be useful as a truth serum. And they did all sorts of weird and wacky experiments with it. But by the 1960s, Albert Huxley and Tim Leary got their hands on it and thought that they could not be reserve of the CIA, and they started to have acid parties in their houses, and the thing grew from there. By 1966, with a firm foothold in San Francisco, LSD became the main threat to America's society. It had seen that many people dropping out and using LSD, they became anti-establishment and anti-government, and all this with the Vietnam War, and this powerful drug was banned in 1968.